Some items we treasure because of their sentimental value and sometimes the people and experiences that they might remind you of. Other collectibles really are a treasure, and they can be worth quite a lot of money. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. There are probably a lot more items in your attic whose value is sentimental, strictly, but once in a while you might find a hidden treasure in there. And today we're going to learn about some of those treasures, maybe zero in a little bit to begin with, at least, on kitchen and household items and what they may be worth. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, she's been with us many times, certified personal property appraiser, or she's a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and also Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And we have links to her businesses on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Shirley, it's always great to see you. Thanks for coming today.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate coming back.
What type, let's talk about kitchen items for a little bit. What are some of the popular collectibles right now in the kitchen area?
Well, I'll tell you, just like the general antiques line, people are really looking for advertising items mm-hmm. these days. And in the kitchen area, it would be related to food items. And seeing old advertising from products that are still around is really fun, and they're really collectible, like maybe flour or mm-hmm. Even beverages, the sodas. We all know about Coca-Cola, but there's certainly other ones, or particular brand names, Lipton,
sure,
Nabisco. Are long-time companies that have food packages, tins, and colorful labels on their bottles and boxes that people like to collect and then use to decorate in the kitchen.
And you know they're popular because you see new versions of these trying to look old,
right.
But they're not really.
Yes, you see the tins they make kind of as if they looked old, and then you look at the bottom and they've got a barcode on, so that's a good giveaway.
Oh boy. Well, the Victorian homemaker had a lot more serving and dining items, I think, than we do today.
Oh my goodness, yes. If you look at a set of Victorian dinnerware, if you see the complete set, you might find not only just the the plates, the cups and saucers, and maybe a fruit bowl like we do, you might see a separate bowl for cream soup, a two-handled soup cup, and then a smaller cup for consomme, if that's what they were serving. And you might find a little about 3-inch round or square plate that would be for the butter pat. And then you might find the open salt, which would be a little 2-inch piece that has a diminutive little spoon, and there was always a large master salt in the set, and you take your spoon your salt into your own individual open salt, and then you take your tiny little spoon and shake it onto your food that way. So there are many, many things. You also might find bone dishes. You didn't leave the bone on your plate after you were done with the meat. That sat in that little crescent-shaped plate that you'd put on the side or top of your regular plate.
Are some of these most valuable when they're part of a set? You're talking about sets here.
Well, they can be, but not everybody collects full set. Well, actually, collecting china is not popular right now.
Right.
For using it, people want things that go to the microwave and dishwasher,
right.
Especially the young people. But for example, one of the things I collect is porcelain open salts. I can collect a lot of them and still, find room for them. And it all started when I was a little girl and found some in my grandmother's attic and thought they were good little dishes for my dolls. So I still today collect them.
That is very cool. You talked about tins earlier. Are there, what about some of the food storage items that are collectible today?
Sure, there's lots of them. There's tins, and there might be, in those days, they had a lot of molds for food. And they call them sometimes jelly molds, but it's not jelly as we know it today. It's more like a homemade jello,
yeah.
A gelatin with maybe fruit or vegetables or something like that. And there's also wooden containers. The Norwegians had what they called a tina, and that would be a wooden storage box with a lid on it, and it'd have a little wooden peg closure to keep the critters out, And They, you know, we had one not too long ago at an estate sale we did with original paint on it. Very interesting. Came directly from Norway. So, and I'm sure in Wisconsin, where we're rich with a lot of heritage from European countries, we probably see those in attics and basements and kitchens
probably
a lot these days.
I remember we had a bread box.
Sure.
When I was a kid, my mom kept it on the counter, and I've actually thought about it. I've got cats that love to eat the bite into my bread.
Uh-huh.
And I've often wished that I had one of those just for my own counter.
Yeah, they had them, you know, in the 50s, 60s were very common, but earlier on they'd be tall metal cases, and they'd have shelves in. And you could, big enough to put a pie in, as well as your loaf of bread. And, of course, when we're talking about food, you know, we can look at the collectibles surrounding a particular item, like, for example, butter. We all know they used to make butter with the butter churn.
Yeah.
First there's the big barrel type, and then there's the little countertop type with a glass jar. So then you've got, when it's done, you've got a chunk of butter. You don't have, you know, four quarters wrapped in paper in a box. You've got a chunk. So what do you do with that chunk of butter? You put it in a mold. And the mold would be either, at first they were wooden, later they came up with some glass ones, and it would have a plunger in. So you'd put the butter in, and then you'd push it out when it was molded in the shape. And then each farm wife or housewife would have their own decoration, their butter. So if they took it to the church picnic or to the, barn raising, you knew the one with the acorns and the oak leaf, that butter belonged to so-and-so, and the one with the flower was so-and-so's, and the cow belonged to somebody else, you know. So they had, each had their own little presses that they pressed their decoration in their butter.
That's really cool. What about pottery?
Oh, pottery. There's so many things that use, you know, you think back to the crocks. A lot of people use them for odds and ends right now, but they were used for, you know, pickling things, storing.
Sauerkraut,
right? There were water jugs in the crockery. And even the companies that now we know of mainly for, let's say, flower vases and planters and that kind of thing, like Roseville, Weller, they would make utilitarian things like water pitchers, milk pitchers. You know, you didn't have the faucet in the kitchen, so you had a pitcher on the table with the water. And so they're kind of collectible, too. But then they were utilitarian wares. They weren't made to be collectible. They were made to use in the kitchen.
You know, one of the neat things about collecting items is that you get to see how a particular thing has evolved over time. And I know you use egg beaters as an example of that.
And they used to be really flat with little spokes. And, you know, you could turn them around, but then they became much more elaborate and elaborate. And I guess eventually they turned into blenders. But, you know, first you'd start with a fork, and then they made something that twirled around so you could mix it better. And if you look at just the hand beaters, and you can just see the evolution of, first it was a very small tin item that was rather flat, and then it became bigger and rounder
and bigger.
And bigger. And then you had wooden handles, and now, of course, they're plastic, if you see them at all, plastic handles. So you can see also the difference in materials that are used, from the tin to now the chrome, that would be food safe.
My mother had a wood-handled one.
That goes
well, you know, when I was a kid.
Yeah, and you look back at those kitchen utensils, you know, even the ones that are just always had a wood handle, very often painted red or green.
Hers was red.
And it could be just a, you know, a fork, a pastry roller, a rolling pin, that kind of thing. And people can collect those for like, maybe $8 to $15.
Sure.
And they're fun to collect, you know, a little strainer with the red handle, and you decorate your kitchen around the red color. So it's fun. It can be very inexpensive. And, of course, you can obviously find kitchen collectibles in a lot higher price ranges as well.
Talking today with Shirley Bauman, I want to give you a chance to join in. Boy, this is fun. We're talking about kitchen collectibles right now, but of course we can talk about other areas as well, other antique items as well with her. Shirley's a certified personal property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Service and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. So if you want to join in, question or comment, or maybe an experience to share, call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Go there. And you can post a photo there as well. And we'll be, happy to take a look at that photo. Shirley will be happy to look at it and see if she can, sometimes that's helpful. A photo is helpful in making any kind of determination at all. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And again, we'd love to hear from you. Does the age of an item always affect its value? Or?
It doesn't always. You know, some things that are old aren't necessarily valuable. And there are some things that are popular collectibles today that aren't necessarily as old as some of the others. Age certainly does play a factor, but it's by no means the only factor.
Well, you look at you look at people who are now sort of in their retirement or just getting into their retirement years. I imagine things from their childhood or even teen years could be quite collectible.
That's absolutely right. You know, we talked about the flower vases and things like Roseville Weller. Those were very common as wedding gifts back in the 40s and such because they were popular at that time. And Roseville does a whole line of different things with florals on them. Many, many different colors, sizes, baskets, you know, ceramics. They're in ceramics. And those are, collectible as things that, people who got married in the 40s now or 50s would have had as gifts.
And are thinking, that'd be nice to have one of those again.
Exactly. And, of course, people do buy back their youth by getting the toys they saw when they were young, maybe the one that didn't show up under the tree.
Understood. That Red Ryder BB gun, maybe.
Yeah, that could be it. Or the Betsy Wetsy doll.
Oh, boy. Well, you mentioned dishes, dishware, and that is something that's kind of faded in popularity a bit, though. Just because people just don't want to, you want something dishwasher safe.
People don't entertain as formally as they used to. So to have that great big set of china for 12 or even 16 with all those pieces I mentioned before that maybe you use at Christmas dinner is something that most people don't do anymore.
And I have the most beautiful set of dishware that I would love to use on a regular basis, but I can't put it in the dishwasher.
Right.
And it's almost too nice to use.
Well, you know, that too nice to use, who's more important, really? You know?
Oh, I mean, too nice to use for myself. There's nothing
That's
too
what
nice
I mean.
My guests. You know what the heck? Nothing is too good for them. But for myself, I should just pull those out and start using them.
Yeah, you know, treat yourself as well as you treat guests.
Oh, man. Well, Shirley Bauman, our guest. Lots of callers online right now. We'll get to those calls. Larry Mueller here, talking antiques with Shirley Bauman. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, though, we're talking with appraiser Shirley Bauman about kitchen and household and other kinds of collectibles. Again, join us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or post a question or a photo on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. Barbara in De Pere, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Yes, you've addressed this problem a little bit by collecting china is not popular. But I have Francona china from 50 years and Maito china from 70 years. They're valuable, but I do not want to go. They're $50 a piece on eBay. Is there a store? I know there was one in Milwaukee that can that you can. It's not a consignment shop type place that you can bring this better china to.
Well, you've got a good question, and it's one I hear very often because this comes up a lot. What can I do with this china? And just as an aside, you have Francoma china, which is a heavy clay, and it comes from Oklahoma. And the gentleman who developed this, his name was Frank, and that's why it's called Francoma. But where do you sell that? It's such a hard thing, and I hear this almost every day. I don't know of any particular consignment shops right now that are out looking for china. I have a set that belongs to a consigner right now that's just beautiful white porcelain with a cobalt blue rim and gold trim, and just absolutely stunning set. And I talked to the Heinemann Auction House in Chicago about it, and they said, well, yes, we could take it, but it would sit in the room that's piled with all the other porcelain we can't sell.
Oh.
So even the auction houses and the consignment shops, you know, are having a hard time selling it. And when you're looking at, you said you saw it online for about $50 a piece. Remember, that might be either what someone is asking for,
right,
not what it actually sells for. Or if you go to the china site that's called replacements.com, that's probably about, I don't know, three times higher than we can actually get for it. They are looking towards the customers who love grandma's china and they broke a cup, and they'll pay whatever it takes to make their china set complete again.
Right.
So that's not the everyday sales item. So I don't really have a good answer for you as to where to sell old china. The online is the best place that I see because somebody might buy it because it was grandma's and that's nostalgic to them.
Yeah,
you just like the whole 13-piece, you know, to go in one deal, not plate by plate. But that's why I called an expert. I thought you'd have some hints for me. But
I wish I had a better answer for that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Barbara, good luck. Appreciate your call very much. I want to give Mary in Richland Center a chance to join us. Mary, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a little piece here. First of all, I have a set of five. It was originally a six. I think they're leaded goblets. I know they were purchased in 1944 because they were given to my parents as a wedding gift. So I don't think they're real valuable, but I was kind of curious about them. But what I am really curious about is I have a... I'm going to have to try to describe it. I bought it at my grandparents' auction. It's like two little dishes together. I mean, they were obviously made together. They've got covers on them, and they're really, it's quite small. They've each got a little plastic spoon in them, and I was wondering if you'd ever seen anything like this. They've got blue around the edge, and they've got a little white heart, and they're kind of a cream color. I was wondering what, you know, if you'd heard of these, what they were used for, and so on. I've never seen anything like this before, and I was just curious about it. I bought it in a box of many things, but I just think it's really cute.
Yeah, well, let's see what Shirley's got to say.
I think I know what you're talking about. It is probably a double open salt. Well, it's not open, a double salt. Some sets, like you said, there were six. Instead of having 12 individual salts, they had six. And those little spoons, again, are what you do it. So they'd set it between the couple who was having their dinner plate, and the two people would each use their side of the little double salt. And that's what I think you have with the tiny little salt spoon in them.
Yeah.
I have some of those in my collection.
Okay. And the value of those, are they worth?
Again, it depends on who made them. You know, if it's Japanese made from maybe the 30s or 20s, you know, it might be $25. I have one that's made by Meissen Porcelain Company, which is a well-known company. We'd look at that one at maybe $85, something like that range. So it varies by who makes it, how detailed it is. Is it hand-painted? Is it decal decorated or transfer decorated? All those things, and, of course, condition play a part.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Pam and Marshall, hi to you.
I was wondering if you have seen, when my grandmother was cooking, she on her counter, she had a metal box that had like three drawers, or three levels, I should say, and she put wax paper, aluminum foil, and I don't remember what else on the other one, and you could just pull a piece out and rip it off with the teeth on the edge of it.
Mm-hmm. Those, yes, they had those, you know. That's when these kinds of paper products, foil and wax paper and the stretch wrap, the cling wrap, plastic wraps, came on rolls. And you wanted, you know, there wasn't maybe a drawer wide enough for the big pieces. And so they made these pieces of usually metal in for the kitchen in about the 40s and 50s. We'd see a lot of that around. And it's a great way to decorate in that vintage kitchen. And I have seen those, and they're fun and useful, certainly if you have the counter space for a piece like that. And, again, how is it decorated, condition of it all makes a difference, but they can be from maybe about $20, I would say, up to maybe $50, $60 if you've got something really special by a well-known name.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I look them up under? What do they call those?
Yeah, what would they call that exactly? I'd look for 1940s, 50s. Try like wax paper dispenser.
Okay.
That's a good idea. Yep, that's a good idea. And Pam, thanks a lot for calling. Janie and Nakusa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. You have a wonderful show.
Thank you.
And I have, this is a curiosity. We were in Poland in 1985, 1986, and my husband's family, a lot of older people, all had a falatska in their kitchen. And a falatska is a top out of a, say, spruce or a balsam tree.
Okay.
You know, you cut that out, and then all the little branches that would stick out around that top, you would cut it off about an inch below that, let it dry, and they would use it between their palms to stir stuff in a crock, like soup or something that was fermenting.
Huh.
It's just an odd, odd thing. No one really, an old, old Polish would know falatska.
Wow.
But I have it, and I thought, how many times, you know, we tried to make a couple just as a funny little gift for somebody, but it didn't work out. But that's what they used. I mean, I don't know how far this goes back. But in the older homes, they all made a soup called zur, which was like rye and garlic and water, and you'd ferment that, and then you would put it on the stove with sausage in it. And every day you'd have to stir that, you know, two or three times, and that's exactly what they did. Between their palms, they would stir it, and it's called a falatska.
Okay, they would kind of roll the handle between their palms, right?
Yeah.
I have seen some of those, and they look like branches with almost a little scrubby thing at the end of it. And and that's what people used to do. They'd make do. They'd find something that worked for the task at hand.
Yeah.
Exactly. Another little thing, I remember being up at the cabin, and my mom was going to make something. I don't know what she was going to make, and she needed a grater. And, I don't have a grater. So Dad went out and he took a can lid and he put nails through it so all the pointy side came out. And that's mm-hmm. what Mom used for the grater that time.
That's resourcefulness.
Good story, yes. Janie. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, I'd never heard of those. Falatska.
I didn't know that's what they were called until now either.
So we both learned something today.
You bet.
Helen in West Bend. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I have a general question and a specific one.
Sure.
And generally, are people actually that interested in collecting things like figurines or dishes or what we years ago considered collectible?
Well, the collectible categories have changed today as what's popular. You know, dishes and that aren't really what people collect, but I do know a lot of women, for example, who collect vintage jewelry, and they like the colored rhinestones from the 30s, 40s, 50s, that kind of thing. Or others might collect, as we're on jewelry, the sterling silver Native American jewelry. Or there are people who collect woodblock prints, Japanese woodblock prints. something they can use to either decorate their home or themselves. You know, they would wear the jewelry, that kind of thing. And if you go on the internet, you can find a collector club for almost anything. So there are still people out there who do collect those things and still love them. But it isn't the same kind of things that people collected, like figurines. You know, if they're collecting them anymore, it's usually young men, older boys collecting, you know, the Star Wars figures or something like that. But it's not like the little girls and boys and puppies and dogs and ceramics like we used to see.
Like the Hummels.
Yeah.
Right, the Hummels. Ceramic Arts Studio is another one. There is a National Collectors Club for Ceramic Arts Studio, and I do an auction for them every year. And that was started here in Madison. And they have their convention here every August. And they still collect it, but the numbers of people who are collecting those figurines, that's what that company made, primarily, are dwindling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And specifically to kitchen items, years ago people used to make their own Christmas cookies and had many different types of cookie cutters.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are they collectible now?
Yes, they are. As the older, the better on those. You know, the ones, the big metal ones are... the most collectible ones that have, say, a flat top on them and then they open on the other side. Then you go on to the ones that might have, like we talked about before, a red or a green handle, and then just the plain metal ones. But, you know, today they're made out of plastic, like so many other things.
Yeah.
So it's the nice old vintage tin metal ones that are collectible.
There you go. Thanks a
lot. And again, that's a collector category that's, you know, you can spend a few dollars on up. You don't have to spend an awful lot of money to collect something like that.
I was just thinking about the things that I collect. I've got one room in the house that is lined, the sort of ceiling, along the ceiling is lined with duck decoys.
Sure.
And then I have branched into other wood-carved birds, owls, and I've got a pileated woodpecker and an ivory-billed woodpecker and a turkey and a pheasant, a beautiful pheasant that's wood-carved. And I have no idea if there are any value to them. Well, I know what I paid for them. And in some cases, it was quite a bit of money. I don't know if I'd ever get my money back. I really don't care.
Well, I always try to tell people, remember how much you enjoyed them when it goes that way. But it sounds like you might have two different things, some older decoys and some artist-made newer things. And those, of course, go up and down in value, and it depends on, there's a lot of those carved birds, whether they're songbirds or marsh birds or prairie birds, whatever, that are made by artists today that are collected.
They're it's fun for me, and I enjoy having them, and I guess I wouldn't sell them anyway.
But. Well, it shows your love of the outdoors. It's what you like.
Yeah, I guess so. Kelsey and Rhinelander, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. So I have this tapestry that my father had given to me that his father had given to him. I know I can date it back to about the 1920s because he had it in his college dorm room about that time. But what I find interesting about it is it's hand-sewn. At least I'm pretty sure it looks very intricate in that way. But it also has kind of these people standing around, sitting down, drinking, having a good time. But it has a woman in the picture also drinking, holding up a beer mug as if she were, you know, drinking alcohol. And I knew back in that day it was kind of odd to see a woman doing that. So it's kind of seen... Is it worth getting appraised? Would it be worth anything? Would you know anything about it?
Well, you bring up a good point because some of the things that were made can be kind of a, fiction or somebody's imagination compared to what really happened in those days. Now, is the dress from about the 1920s, or would it be more like colonial? Of the people who are in the
tapestry. More the 19, maybe a little bit older, actually.
Okay.
She didn't look like she's wearing a foofy dress. She looked more relaxed.
Okay, so, you know, it matters. In the 20s, they were the roaring 20s. There they had, you know, the ladies were dancing. The flappers were kind of known as a little bit, you know, wild women, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be depicted a little bit differently than a, you know, in the colonial period, the, you know, 1890s and the Victorian era. So, you know, that depends on what era it is. And again, a tapestry value would not only be based on the what it's depicting, but also, is it wool? Is it silk? What's it made out of? Is it hand done? Is it machine made? It, you know, so many of those things, and how well it's made, the quality of the weaving. So it's really hard to put a value on, of course, the size. But it sounds like something that someone would have wanted in their college room. So I think it would have been more something at that point to depict, you know, people having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, I can't give you a value on the air, but they're not as popular once as they were the textiles in the tapestry field.
But something that I could definitely look at getting appraised, be worth doing that?
You might. Again, you'll have to look at... Try doing some research first online, because you have to look at the value of what the item is compared to the investment you're going to make in getting it appraised. And I have a lot of people who say they just kind of want to know because it was something grandma left. Well, they only really want to pay for that information if it's something valuable, you know, because otherwise they feel like they've kind of wasted that. And so, you know, do a little research yourself first. And if you can get an idea, you know, you can do an image search on Google now. Put a picture of it up in the Google image search, and it might come up with something just like it or very similar.
Awesome. Thank you for the good ideas.
Yeah, sure. That's a great idea. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Kelsey. Erna in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I have a small vase in my hand, 8 inches tall, and it says 20 on the bottom, hand decor, 22K gold, J like John, S like Susan. And then the bottom, I think it's keeping dash B-R-I-G.
Hmm. Is it a ceramic piece decorated with gold?
Right.
Yes. We see these often, and they're different, different formats. Sometimes it might be a plate that's decorated with this 22 karat gold. The thing about it is that the decoration is on there in such a way that it's put on so thin that you can't actually separate the gold, so it doesn't really have gold value. It has, it's a gold kind of a deposit that you can't separate from it. So the piece would be valuable as a ceramic vase that's nicely decorated rather than having any gold value.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Betsy in Park Falls. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I have found in my garage a wooden table painted Green Bay green. And I cannot, for the life of me, remember anything about it. Now, I lived for 40 years in Illinois and moved to Wisconsin and have been here for 22 years. I don't know how it got in my garage. I don't recall it ever coming from Elgin to here or anything about it. But my kids are just ecstatic, and they're going to completely redo it for me, and I just wondered what you knew. I'm sure it's a kitchen table, has one little drawer in it. It's wood. It probably is 36 by 24. Probably four people could have breakfast there. But it has some very interesting legs in that about 12 inches from the top of the table where it is attached down. Looks like a screw, round little circles on the legs.
Mm-hmm.
Does that say anything to you?
Well, it's hard for me to imagine exactly what you're talking about. You know, it could be, it's probably a 20th century piece. It could easily be in the 30s to 50s, I would guess. Some of the clues to look at are that little drawer If you pull out that drawer and see what the construction is, if there are nails in it, look if the nail heads are or the screws are perfectly round. If there's screws, if the slots are perfectly even down the middle, that would indicate machine made and fair, you know, more into the 20th century.
Yeah.
The construction under the legs, the glue blocks tell you a story, and you can look under, I think the term furniture detective, and kind of get some ideas of what construction techniques came from what period. And again, on the drawer, if you've got wide dovetails, that's usually 20th century. If you see dovetail works with very fine pins, the little tails, pins and tails, that would indicate an earlier, before the turn of the century piece. So those kinds of clues, construction. If you see Phillips head screws, you know it's pretty modern. So
Betsy, it might have been there when you moved. You know, it could have been something that the other previous owners left in the garage.
Well, I know that I'm saying my mind is fine, but I don't really remember. I had five kids, and I can't imagine in my other house when they were all doing homework that somebody wasn't down in the basement at least doing, because we kind of ran out of
Space. Yeah, ran out of places. Well, it sounds like an interesting table, Betsy, and thanks a lot for calling and talking with us about it. Appreciate it. We are visiting today with Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And we have links to her businesses on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. By the way, if you have a photo, you know, like for this Betsy, if she'd had a photo of that table, we might have been able to tell her a little bit more about it. You may have a photo. Send it to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and we'll take a look at it. I'm Larry Mueller with Shirley Bauman, my guest, as we talk antiques with her on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk collectibles today. We zeroed in a little on kitchen collectibles, but we're kind of going all over the map now as we visit with Shirley Bauman, who is a registered Wisconsin auctioneer and owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. I see we're getting some items up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, some photos there. That look kind of cool. One from Patty says, I use this monthly for cookie making. And what is it?
Well, what it looks like actually is an ice cream scoop.
That's what I thought.
And, of course, they're nice to put the dough in, and you can press the button there, and it drops the dough out, and that's another use. And that's great. There are so many different ice cream scoops. This is another thing that people collect. You know, in the early days, the ice cream, the scoop where you dig into the ice cream might be more funnel-shaped than round.
Ah.
And then they had a little hole in the end of it so you could push it out if it didn't want to drop out by itself. And then later they came with that mechanism that would scrape the bowl of the ice cream scoop there. And so there are different sizes. Again, this is a wooden-handled one, and you can find painted-handled ones, very different size scoops. Like I said, the really old ones with the tin scoops, and they can be, you know, $25, $30 up into the hundreds for the really old ones.
You know, Donna sent something. She said, my dad is interested in what this vintage hand crank cream separator made by Montgomery Ward might be worth. She got a picture of it here. That's a pretty old thing. It still works.
Yeah. Normally, when I think of the cream separators, we think of the large ones used on the farms. And I hadn't seen that tabletop style, actually. And it's pretty interesting to look at. Montgomery Ward's, of course, was a catalog service, and they were in business for a long time. And they started, I think, probably the turn of the century, although this one I don't think is quite that old. I really can't tell you an exact, I haven't actually researched these or sold any of these, but I would think as a hand crank kitchen collectible, something like that might be in the range, you know, $40, $60, $70, something on that range. But again, that's just, I'm going on my gut feeling here on that.
Not going to make you wealthy.
No. No. But it's interesting.
Yes. Eric in Kenosha, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to put in a plug for some unusual items that people collect and offer a little advice to people who may have these things around their house. I'm a scientist, a chemist by profession, and I like to collect this glassware that was made in the 20s and 30s that held materials. It has raised letters with the names of the chemicals on it, and pharmacists had them, and they're all over the place. And it's really cool because it ties into my profession. You know, doctors collect medical instruments and things like that. So if you have stuff you don't know what it is, chances are there may be somebody who's interested in it, but you may not know for sure who they are. That's why I like places like eBay and things, because it's a good place to look for stuff you may never find anyplace else.
Yeah,
that's very true. There's lots of online auction opportunities, and in addition to eBay, you can go into ProxyBid, you can go into Invaluable, AuctionZip.com, BidLive. Did I say ProxyBid? There's many, many of them. MaxNet. There's all kinds of iCollector. Many, many of those. And, you know, you want to know what your items are so that you can search on them by name or type.
Mm-hmm. There you
right.
go.
Yeah. yeah. And
can
what
I
fun you
have.
I was going to say, what
go
fun
ahead.
You can have with this collection, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's fun to display. Mm-hmm. The one thing I wanted to mention, my father collected cameras for many, many years. And 10 years ago, his collection was worth a fair amount of money. But with the advent of digital photography now, only the really super high-end cameras are really worth anything. Not many people are collecting the older ones. So with the changing of the times, you know, the values of these things will go up and down.
That's just a wonderful point. And people often say, well, 10 years ago, somebody told me it was worth this. It should be worth that much more now. Well, just like you say, the times change and that changes, and antiques and art, it's all a market, and it goes up and down. Compared to the times and what's popular when.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, it's worth what people will pay.
Yeah,
yes.
That's exactly right, Eric. Thanks a lot for calling.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Greg in Roscoe, Illinois. Hi, thank you for calling.
How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Well, I bought a porcelain bowl, back in the 70s for a quarter at a garage sale, and it's real impertinent. I mean, it's just got gold and peacocks and Mount Fuji. And so I took it down to the DeYoung Museum of Natural History in San Francisco, and they authenticated it as 19th century Kutani, which I don't know anything about that, but it does have the Kutani stamp on the bottom of the bowl. So I was just wondering what you might know about that.
Well, you did just the right thing by taking it to a museum for authentication. Number one, appraisers aren't necessarily authenticators. In some cases, there might be an appraiser who specializes in something and can authenticate it. But those museums usually are the authenticators. They know the, they can read the marks from other languages. They know all the details and such like that. But they won't value it. That's the appraiser's job. And the museum doesn't value it because that could be considered a conflict of interest, because maybe they value it at such and they really want to buy it. Did they give you the right value? You know, they want to have it for their collection. So the appraiser values it, and the appraiser, being ethical, should not want to buy that item from you. It's their job to give you the value of it. So you've done right. I can't tell you much more about your bowl right now without some research. Asian antiques are not really my specialty. And so I don't know them off the top of my head like I know others, but it sounds like you do have something special. And an appraiser that either specializes in Asian decorative arts, or like what I do, I have a colleague who specializes in them, so I consult with her when I have something that I don't know. So I'm sorry I can't give you more information over the air.
Yeah, there we go.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. For calling. Appreciate it. And Rick in Bell Center. Hi, thanks a lot for calling.
Hi. I have some dishes from 1950 that I'm thinking to get rid of, and I've asked some people, and I'm not sure what to value them at. They're California pottery from an outfit called Cenar, C-E-N-A-R, stacked on the bottom, and they're strawberry. Plates are strawberry-shaped with red and green leaves on top. The cups, coffee cups, are strawberry. The plates under the cups are leaves. Salt pepper shakers are strawberry with leaf tops, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a set for six with serving dishes and gravy bowl and other odds and ends.
It sounds pretty interesting. California pottery in the 50s is collectible. That whole mid-century modern kind of era, that retro feel, there's certainly a collector group around that. And if I were going to sell these dishes, I would sell them online. I think you'd be exposed to more people, and do use the term, you know, mid-century in there, because that a lot of people are searching after. As far as the Cenar, C-E-N-A-R, that might be the name of the pattern or the line. And I think
that's actually the name of the pottery. I did figure that out. It was a couple of guys who were at a different California pottery and then started their own in 1935, 38. It ended in 55. That I did figure out from being online.
Okay. Okay. I'm not familiar with that pottery at all, but California pottery is collectible. It's not the top of the line. We said, it's not going to make you wealthy, but there are certainly people who collect it.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jackie in Milwaukee, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I've got three questions. One at the end, I'd like to know, what do appraisals cost for a house? I've been here since 54. I'm 85. I've got a wooden chopping block in the shape of a pig that I remember cooking on with my grandmother. And remember, I'm 85. And then I have a whole bunch of sets, because my grandmother and mother were both great cooks, and little tin tart tins. I think they're tin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Plus a bunch of other stuff. Not the pig. My son will find room for that. But there are too many other things. How do you find someone that could come in and give me an idea, and what are the charges on that?
Okay, it sounds like you've got a good handle on what you need. You want to know what these things are and what they might be valued at, and I would think you want to know that for probably dividing equitably among your family members, and maybe there's some special things that you want to have insured, or to include in your will that so-and-so gets a special piece of furniture or something like this. So what we do, we have a couple of things. When we do an appraisal, if it's truly for an estate, that's the official estate document, then you would want to have an accredited or certified appraiser come in and work with you. If it's like you want to kind of know that you're dividing things somewhat equitably among your family members, your children, grandchildren, that kind of thing, we do a verbal consultation in that case, and you can come behind and take notes, write down. Some people take sticky notes and put them right on the item. But then we do a verbal, and we don't produce a written document at the end. And that takes a lot less time, and that, you know, meets the needs of some people. I have a lot of people in your situation, or those that say, I got all this of my grandma's stuff, and I have no idea if it's junk or not. Just come and tell me. So then we do a verbal consultation that way, and it's really a verbal appraisal. We walk through. We don't really research a lot. We do it from experience and knowledge that we have, and maybe we do a little bit of research here with carrying the iPad around, but not much. Whereas the written document, we will do the research and write and sign it for you.
Mm.
Okay.
And appraisers will charge an hourly fee normally. Some would do a flat fee, but for the most part, it's an hourly fee. And we see them varying quite a bit, but I think the lowest you'd probably see around here nowadays is $75 an hour to maybe $200 an hour. It varies with the experience and credentials of the appraiser.
Okay. What about that pig? I mean, that I have never seen anything like that.
Is it a cutting board?
It's a cutting board in the shape of a pig.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I actually...
A wooden pig, and it, and as I say, I've got a good memory. I don't walk too well, but I got a good memory. And I can remember cutting stuff on that with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm 85 years old.
Sure.
Yeah.
That would be mostly decorative then?
Well, at this point it would, but it would fall under the category of primitive collectibles. And those older ones in the shape of a pig, you know, they remade those a lot and put a little painting on it and that kind of thing. But the older ones are collectible. Primitives aren't quite as popular right now as they were a little bit, a little while ago. But dating it to the older thing, you could do, it's a kitchen collectible. It's of interest to people who like pigs. Mm-hmm. And so you've got a cross collectible there. And, you know, it could be anywhere from maybe $40 to $100. It's really hard to say, but it's not something you want to just use as firewood.
No, not at all. I think I was in about third grade in my school when Mrs. Dahl, our teacher, brought in a whole bunch of those wooden pigs, mm-hmm. those little breadboards, and we all varnished them and put our own little designs on them, and that was Mom's Mother's Day. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. If someone told you that you could appear on Antiques Roadshow, what would you take? Have you always wondered whether something you have is worth a lot of money? Or maybe it's only sentimental value. Larry Mueller here. Great to have along Shirley Bauman with us today. Certified personal appraiser, property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Comes by a few times a year to help us understand the value of things that we've collected and how the appraisal and auction markets work. And it's always a lot of fun when she comes by. Thanks for being with us again, Shirley. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's a lot of fun. And we have phone people online at 1-800-642-1234. Phone line, that is, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And, you know, Jessica from Stoughton's been waiting an awfully long time. So let's go there and find out what she has to say. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
What have you got for us?
I have an old ledger book that I found at a yard sale for a dollar. The interesting thing about it is that I just picked it up because I knew it was something. Got it home and started paging through. And there's about 25 to 30 pages front and back that were used as a scrapbook. The entire thing is filled. Now, I started to date some of these things, and some of the dates are actually on the newspaper clippings and things like that. These are dated from immediately before the Emancipation Proclamation and following the Emancipation Proclamation. And so it's not only, you know, quite old, but it's also a very significant snippet of history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are articles of that I've looked up. There's death notices and, you know, marriage announcements and things like that. But there are also, you know, the article that was printed when certain generals had passed away and had died in the war. And there are firsthand accounts of a slave mother trying to escape. It's absolutely
really fascinating.
It's full of these kinds of things and their firsthand accounts. I mean, this is when news was, you know, very beautiful. It was a story. It was a beautiful story account of what was actually mm-hmm. going on.
Yeah.
And it is full.
So, boy, what would be a value on something like that, Shirley?
That's a hard one to value from this kind of description. Number one, I think it does have historic significance because it tells us actually how things happen. And that makes it of interest. In terms of articles, if they're glued down on paper and we don't know where they came from, that kind of devalues that a little bit. If we knew where the article was written and if it wasn't attached, you can have that, have a conservator separate it, but mm-hmm. That does, you know, cost money to do that. But having them glued down is not a good thing. If they were just like pressed in there, it would be something. Most newspapers themselves aren't worth a lot, maybe $5 to $10, unless they have very historic significance. And yours might. Again, not knowing where they came from makes a difference. I think the value here is primarily of telling the stories of history and how things happened back at that period around the Civil War. And Civil War items, I would think military collectors would love that. Mm-hmm. As far as putting a value on it, that's really hard. It depends on finding the people who really want that history and that of interest. You know, historical societies might want that, especially if you knew where these individuals or where the accounts came from and the people were living that are discussed in the items. I've seen scrap goods go for, you know, $300-$400, and I've seen others go for $10. But
yeah, I think probably one of the most significant articles in the scrapbook was an account of when Abraham Lincoln visited one of the southern camp hospitals. And it's an actual firsthand account of how he looked when he came in, how he looked, how the soldier looked when he shook his hand, and just things that are, it's really cool. Amazing. So, and it's something that, like you said, it doesn't seem like it'd be easy to put a value on, but it's something that belongs, you know, mm-hmm. like in a museum. I mean, it's just a beautiful piece of history.
You might, because you're in Stoughton, the Wisconsin Historical Society would be a place really to check with them, because they do have a significant Civil mm-hmm. War and, you know, that sort of era.
Yeah, I would think, just kind of an aside from collecting, and that it would be fun to put that into a book so that many people could see those articles.
It would really be a lot of fun, wouldn't it, to like photocopy those pages
and make it into an actual book.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you got something really cool, Jessica. I hope you follow up. And actually donating it to, if they could place a value on it.
Well, they usually don't. They usually send them to an appraiser place the value on it. Yeah, because of that conflict of interest, possibly.
Oh.
Possibility. And, you know, with research, we would look and see what other, scrapbooks of that era and with that similar kind of content might have sold for. It would just take some research, but it certainly can be done.
Thanks, Jessica, for calling. Barbara in Madison. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, I have a machine here to make a bobbin crochet. I saw something like this on a TV show called Lark Rise to Candleford, which took place in the 1800s, I think. It has a kind of a semicircle armrest padded, and then there's a roller attached. It looks like a fat rolling pin, and there are straight pins stuck into this to a pattern that's attached, and each pin is attached with a string to a bobbin.
Hmm. I'm not getting a mental picture here of the item you're talking about.
There's crochet. Somebody has done, I don't know, I think my mother got this, but it's a strip of crocheting that's attached.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would have been some kind of a machine, so you didn't have to do the crochet just by hand with a hook. Not really understanding exactly what it looks like. Similar types of those things are of interest and collected for people who like textiles and that kind of thing. And I would think it would probably be an item that would be under $100 in value. But again, it's a little piece of our history from the household and what someone might use to, get a piece of crocheting done a little bit faster than doing it with just a hook.
There you go. Thanks very much for calling. Kathy in Racine, hi.
How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm actually calling in with more of a story than any question, but as I was growing up, always at special occasions, and my mom would set the table with her Red Wing pottery dinnerware, and it was a 10-piece set, and it was kind of unique, I thought, because they were squarish plates with rounded-off corners in this beautiful, what was it, Chinese lantern pattern on it. But she had the bowls and the extra plate and even some, I guess, coffee urns that went with it. Well, when it became time to move her from her home into assisted living, she was disappointed that nobody wanted that. And one of the reasons I didn't want it is I had already inherited like two or three sets of dishes from my late husband's side of the family. And it's like, where am I going to put this? But she was very disappointed, and I had the memories of always having, you know, dinner with those, like at Christmas. And so I said, Mom, I'll take it. And so I moved out a different set of china and moved those into my hutch. And the first Christmas after we did that, she was at my house for Christmas. And I set the table with the Red Wing. And she, you should have seen the look on her face when we sat down at the table to think that I was using those same dishes. And it made doing the dishes and not being able to put them in the dishwasher after dinner all worth it, just by the look on her face.
Oh, yeah. I would bet.
Yeah, great story.
You put a lump in my throat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was worth it.
And, you know, a lot of people know Red Wing pottery from the crockery. And they had this, what they call the art pottery line, and that was dishes and such. And it's usually from the 40s, 50s era, again, into that mid-century modern. So people do really collect that as well today.
Thank you very much for sharing that, Kathy. I appreciate it. We have some great photos up on my Facebook page. If you want to see some really cool things, go there, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Carla, though, sent us a note. She said, I have a cookbook that came with a wood, I think, cook stove my grandmother bought about 80 years ago. It's smaller, but chock full of recipes. One of my favorites starts out like this. Take a calf head, have someone else remove the brain and membranes.
It shows how times have changed.
Oh, my goodness me. Oh, Sarah in Manitowoc, thanks a lot for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to check with you. I inherited a desk. It's a large walnut desk, two-piece, with the base of it is sort of like a schoolhouse desk, and then it's slanted at the top with one single drawer across. And up above, there are two doors and many slots inside. And this desk came from the law offices of D.D. Fairchild in Metamora, Illinois. And my parents purchased this from a dealer when we lived in Metamora more than 50 years ago. And at that time, that was the office that Abraham Lincoln used when he came to town. So I wondered if there's any way to find out a value on that piece of furniture.
Well, there's a couple of things, and I'm so glad you asked this question because it goes to provenance.
Yeah.
And that's such a difficult and important item in this collecting world. Number one, you have to be able to prove that it actually belonged or was used by Abraham Lincoln for it to have any value associated with it. For an antiques dealer to tell you that, well, golly, do you think maybe an antiques dealer might have had a story once upon a time?
Well, that's possible, but it does have D.D. Fairchild's name across the back in blue ink. I was with my parents when they purchased this piece. The dealer was reputable. Her name was Mrs. Gamble. Like I said, it came from the family of D.D. Fairchild in Metamora. The dealer purchased it directly from them.
That's great, and I would write that down. I write it down now, and I'm not saying that I don't want anybody to think that I was saying antique dealers are not, you know, reputable, or that you're not telling us a true story. But sometimes things do get a little bit embellished over the years as well. And, you know, knowing that it came from that town, it had that name on, you know, if it's handwritten in ink, we can't prove who wrote it on there. The idea is to have the information that really proves that. And that's really what provenance is about. Now, the other thing about provenance is, was it used in by the person in such a, that is related to why they are famous? For Abraham Lincoln, a desk, yes. If you can prove that, I would think you would have, and I can't tell you a number right off, but you would have something that would be more valuable than a desk I used, certainly. Yeah. And again, if the desk were used while he was president and you could show a photograph of him sitting at that desk, well, then you'd really have something that you'd probably want to take to, you know, Sotheby's or Christie's or the big auction houses kind of thing. But it's actually proving that connection.
Yeah, if you had a photo of him standing by the desk or
sitting at it, writing, whatever, even in that law office or that office, even if he wasn't at it, it was in that office. The other thing is that not everything that's owned by a famous person is really carries the provenance. Abraham Lincoln is kind of a special occasion, special case. But a lot of some of this provenance thing has really been hyped by auction house PR companies, I believe. You know, just because, you know, a famous singer, let's say Johnny Cash, for example. He had a picture on his wall that just somebody hung up. It had nothing to do with him. It had nothing to do with what he liked. Would not really carry much provenance if somebody said, well, I got that from Johnny Cash as a gift. Okay, it's still valued for what it is because it didn't. But if somebody said, Johnny Cash gave me his guitar as a gift, and there's, you know, it's been known that he used it on stage, that's where provenance comes in. That's connected to what made him famous. So that's kind of the difference in just, you know, something somebody owned. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the big auction houses are saying everything Jacqueline Onassis ever owned has to be very valuable.
There you go. Thank you, Sarah, very much for calling. I appreciate your call. I want to give Carol in Oak Creek a chance to join us. Carol, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have some ancient pottery from the Etruscan civilization. It came from Italy, and it was passed down through the generations, and now I have it. And these pieces, I'm told, date to like 500 BC. I don't know if I should take it to a museum, these pieces. I've got several, like, small pitchers and oil lamps that were used in. In fact, some of the pieces even still have a little mud and stuff from where they were dug up from the ground. Mm-hmm. I don't know where in my family they came from, but I have them now.
Well, a museum would be the place, I think, to start, because they, especially an anthropology museum, maybe associated with a university, because they could probably give you a lot more information about it. And authenticate them, which is what you'd need, and you know, get that information from those experts, and then you might have an appraiser value them for you. And there are appraisers who specialize in antiquities, and that's what you would need to find for the value of them.
Yep, there you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And back to the Facebook page for a minute. There are so many photos up there, but here's one from Katia. Would you know a price range for this antique chair? It's like it's got dogs on the
upholstery, but we never know if the upholstery has been changed or not along the years, and I would guess it probably has.
Yeah.
But from the look, I can't. It's kind of dark photo, but from the look, I think it's probably an Eastlake-style chair, in maybe the 1890s to 1900. And if it is that, it's likely to be made out of walnut, possibly mahogany, mm-hmm. but probably walnut. And a side chair like that these days, again, that whole Victorian, that's late Victorian period, is not that popular right now. So you might be looking at about the $150 or so dollar range, give or take a bit.
And here's one from Joseph, who this is really a pretty dresser, I think.
Yes.
It's a cherry, looks like, with
it
a mirror.
Does.
That's really pretty.
It looks to me like a gentleman's dresser. And if you see the compartment on the right hand is deep, it looks like that would be the compartment where the top hat would fit in.
Ah.
And then the smaller items in the drawers under and the larger clothing items in the bottom drawer. And, of course, the mirror so he could see the whole look from the top hat down. And cherry is, again, very sought after. People do like cherry wood on their furniture. And, again, by not being able to see it in person, I can't tell if it's original period from about 1900 or if it could be possibly a reproduction. We don't see those as often around here in cherry wood, so it makes me wonder if it's possibly a reproduction piece, but I'm not saying that it is. If it's authentic, it's like I say, it's probably from 1900s, and you should be able to kind of look on the internet and get an idea of what construction methods they would have used back then and compare that, like the dovetailing on the drawers, if that's thin or chunky kind of, and if it's got original hardware and that kind of thing. Very nice.
Very nice. Very nice piece. That's for sure. Boy, we're running out of time. How about something from Bill? My mother, born in 1909, saw these figures on the mantle from the earliest years, no markings, porcelain, and it's a couple of young people with umbrellas.
Yeah, it looks very nice. Markings often help us, but it's not the only thing. These look to be a very nice, it's hard to get an idea of size on from the photographs like that, but I would guess maybe 8 or 10 inches tall. And they look to be well done. One of the things you want to look at is the faces. Are they painted nicely? Mm-hmm. A lot
these
of detail.
Look nice.
And they look great. Markings help. Faces look nice that I can see. Details in the clothing. Again, height makes a difference. If they're like 4 inches or 10 inches, they could be anywhere from, you know, $20 a piece to maybe much more, $150 maybe.
Well, lots more. We could go on forever, I think, Shirley. Thank you so much.
Oh, what fun this has been.
Oh, it's been lots of fun. And Shirley Bauman, our certified personal property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. You can go to my Facebook page. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And if you type those in, you'd find them. Or just go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and we have links to her pages. Right at the Facebook page. And you don't have to be a member of Facebook to go to the page. Garden Talk tomorrow with the author of The Big Bad Book of Botany. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.